Hello, and thank you for joining us for the RealCom webinar. I'm Sarah Bempert with RealCom, and in today's session, we'll learn about 5G and Wi-Fi 6 and discuss future in-building communication strategies. This education is supported by our gold sponsors, Aruba, Corning, RF Connect, and Spotr Networks, and we will learn more about these companies throughout the session. Today's webinar moderator is Nick Stello. Nick is SVP IT Infrastructure at Vornado Realty Trust, and his responsibilities include leading the company's IT initiatives as they relate to in-building cellular networking, cybersecurity, and smart building connectivity. Vornado's unique assets have enabled Nick to both differentiate and increase the value of its properties by structuring innovative agreements with national cellular carriers and other related technology providers. Thank you very much for moderating today's session, Nick, and I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. Good afternoon and good morning, depending on where you are and listening to this webinar. As Sarah stated, I am Nicholas Stello, Senior Vice President of Technology at Vornado Realty Trust. I will be your moderator today for this this webinar, and I think we've assembled some fantastic people on the panel. I think the topic is relevant. The topic is, of course, what else 5G, right? But it is a little bit different of a twist in terms of really focusing in on in-building communications. A few months ago, Sarah and I traded emails and phone calls regarding a topic for a webinar, and I took the selfish view, I must admit, that why don't we look at it from a landlord's point of view? I'm still learning about it, and I know a lot of my real estate brethren out there are, you know, everyone's wanting to get more information. It's still in its infancy. But from a landlord's point of view, I think it would be beneficial for not only other landlords, but for property managers and the folks on the sales side of things, where they can understand what landlords are looking for and where their current thought process may be, and help, you know, narrow that gap. So let's get started if we can. Just an overview of Vornado Realty Trust. We are focused in on primarily New York City. We believe strongly in sustainability. We started this indoor cellular initiative way back in 2007. And at that time, we had really had no idea. I wish I could tell you that we did, but we really had no idea about what it would turn into in the, not sort of an amenity, but more of a requirement. And those were the good old days of, you know, everyone realizes and remembers, where capital was readily available. We created great relationships and still have them, direct relationships with the carriers. We had properties that were highly sought after, and it's been a very advantageous agreement and project that continues to this day. As you can see, it's mushroomed to over 20 million square feet of coverage. Those numbers would actually be a little bit higher, but we recently spun off some different divisions. So it's been a very well-received project, and, you know, we're fortunate to have the partners, and many of which are on the call here today, to help us make that so successful. So what will we be speaking about? There are a few items. Again, from a landlord's point of view, we have a great panel today. We will be picking their brains in terms of where are we, what's real, what's not. And, you know, when you get into the marketing hype, it is really a marketing hype, or is it a requirement? For those of us who watched the Super Bowl, there was 5G just all over the place. As a matter of fact, they even touted that it was the first 5G camera on the field to televise a Super Bowl game. So it is all around us. It is certainly oversaturated in terms of hype. But I'd like to know, as a landlord, you know, I get questions and requirements, if you will, from either the tenants, from the leasing executives or senior executives regarding 5G. And, you know, I'm more interested in what is their need for 5G, as opposed to do they want it just to have it. But either way, we need to satisfy those folks best we can. So I'm trying to understand really what the hype versus the requirement is right now. And that goes into timing. You know, between 5G and CBRS, you know, when is the general acceptance of these technologies, when will that, when will we realize that in terms of it's, of course, 5G as opposed to, you know, 5G to me is everywhere, but it's no place right now in a large respect. I'd like to understand the value, the timing where we can do a value add for those technologies. And I had mentioned internal and external pressure for 5G. There really isn't much for CBRS, and that sort of makes sense. The pressure for 5G or the questions and interest, again, are coming from those three facets of executives, leasing folks in our enterprise, and tenants. So it's coming from the top down, but CBRS for us here at Vornado was really more of an organic interest. It's coming from the IT group that's working closely with operations to see if CBRS can get a foothold, which we believe, you know, for IoT and in helping efficiencies and things like that. So there really isn't much in terms of tenants asking for that yet, but perhaps that will change as the adoption rate gets higher. And, you know, Wi-Fi 6, is it a bridge? Is it something that will be a permanent fixture? I'd like to ask the panel and hear what they, you know, need to say about that. We are in the midst of, you know, entertaining and rolling out Wi-Fi 6, and how does that change perhaps our view internally here at corporate, not only at the properties which serve our tenants? So that's interesting. CBRS, like I said, I think it's an operations or IoT play in terms of a value add initially, but there's also monetization. I've seen some spreadsheets that are, you know, eye-popping in terms of what the potential revenue can be, and that word potential. So we own real estate in high barrier to entry markets, New York City, and we're in Times Square, we're in Penn Plaza, and the foot traffic there is immense. So whatever we try to do, it's magnified by a few hundred thousand per day. And that reflects in some of the models that I've seen that may or may not be true, may or may not be accurate, obviously. That remains to be seen. Finally, third party. We've done very little third party partnerships. We have the assets. We're fortunate enough to have such great assets in carriers, direct relationships with them. But I think with CBRS, from what I understand and know, and I'm part of the group out there trying to figure all this stuff out as well, I think the acquirement frequency, the management of it, certainly if there's monetization, I think it'd be interesting to see if their third parties now really come into play here. And hopefully we'll get to what's next. So I too believe that, you know, the marketing, if we can get our 4G LTE systems, which we have throughout most of our portfolio, if we can have that upgraded to say 5G, is that a win? Does that really satisfy the folks that want 5G? Perhaps, but if they have, you know, specific needs and interests for 5G, I'd like to know them so we can meet them. And then we're looking at a potential CBRS pilot in both Times Square and Penn Plaza, those two sites that certainly oversaturation of foot traffic, to see if this works, to really just put our toe in the water to see if it's something that we can build off of and move forward. So with that, Sarah, I'll turn it back over to you in order to introduce our first
Thank person. You, Nick. Yeah, our first educational presentation is from RF Connect, but before we hear from Jeff Hipshin, let's watch a short video on the company.
Smart buildings and smart campuses begin with smart wireless connectivity. Fortunately, IT leaders have a broad set of wireless tools to choose from, including Wi-Fi and cellular, as well as specialty unlicensed and lightly licensed spectrum. Of course, more options means more complexity. RF Connect helps IT leaders become heroes of connectivity. We do this by architecting wireless network strategies that ensure business-critical applications, BYOD initiatives, and visitor connectivity requirements are supported by the best tools for the job. Learn more at rfconnect.com.
Great. So if I may, Jeff Hipshin is Executive Vice President of RF Connect. where he oversees marketing, sales, and services. He also serves as president of the Safer Buildings Coalition, an industry group focused on indoor public safety communications. Prior to RF Connect, Jeff founded Digital Data Solutions, which is a Midwest voice and data network solutions provider. Jeff, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate that. And I'm sure everybody that's on the call expecting right to get out of the gate with wireless is wondering why we've got a picture of Curly here. But anyhow, in the movie City Slickers, Curly counsels Mitch, the character played by Billy Crystal, that the secret to life is just one thing. If there's just one thing you take away from not only my presentation, but this entire webinar today, it's this. Take a strategic and heterogeneous toolkit approach to wireless connectivity planning, because IT leaders should avail themselves of the tools and apply the best ones for the job. The good news is there's been tremendous innovation of the wireless toolkit. The toolkit includes technology, and there's been, as we all are aware today, a lot of innovation currently. 5G, Wi-Fi 6, we all deliver new performance, reliability, and security improvements, and will unlock new use cases. LPWAN, such as Sigfox or Zigbee, provide specialized connectivity to IoT sensors. On the spectrum side, there's been tremendous innovation recently. CBRS is a use of spectrum so that building owners and other stakeholders can now use pristine spectrum that was previously something only mobile operators, cable companies, or very large and deep-pocketed corporations could leverage. Another key component is accessibility. There's been a signal source innovation. To meet BYOD and fourth utility expectations, building owners have more options to obtain a signal source to provide cellular connectivity indoors. Given that mobile operators are increasingly unlikely to assist building owners, this helps building owners control their own destiny. Similarly, data security is paramount. Building owners want to control what data stays inside the building versus having it go out to the public, and they want to be able to access analytics. Last category, which we've seen just more so in the past year, is funding. We're seeing more and more commercial real estate and enterprises wanting to control their wireless destiny, so they are looking for alternatives to traditional CapEx and leasing. The good news is we can now offer wireless as a service with built-in technology refresh that stays off the balance sheet. Heterogeneous networks. All of wireless offerings should be in your toolkit today, and shouldn't be viewed as an either or. They're all relevant and have a play. Wi-Fi, visitor connectivity, non-mission critical applications, guest access, even voice in the right situation, as well as high latency applications like temperature and lighting. On the cellular side, it's great for traditional usage like phones, tablets, vehicles, and as well as providing the public and public safety communications and FirstNet nowadays. Private LTE, low latency business critical connectivity, kiosks, point of sale, advanced access control like biometrics, advanced surveillance, robotics, augmented reality, and manufacturing. LPWAN is really prevalent in IoT sensors. Soon we'll have millimeter wave 5G available, which will offer high density and capacity hotspots, not just limited to outside, but as well as in building. Multi-operator cellular is going to be available pretty soon on private cellular LTE networks, which will provide some unique opportunities. We like to, at RF Connect, refer to wireless connectivity heroes. Our job as subject matter experts is to enable our clients the ability to be the hero. So in that aspect, the good news is there's more tools in the toolkit. The bad news is with greater options come more complexity. The following are best practice tips for commercial real estate IT leaders. Control your own wireless destiny. Don't hand over decision-making to mobile operators or third-party owners whose goals and objectives for the wireless network may likely not match yours over the long term. Proactively plan with consideration of short-term, 12 to 24 months, mid-term, 3 to 5 years, and long-term, 7 to 10 years scenarios. Embrace heterogeneous network approach and adopt the best tools for the job. Plan for the unexpected by designing for capacity and infrastructure upgrade contingencies. Don't go it alone. Engage trusted resources early and often. For further information, you can check out today's RealCom Advisory Newsletter. I'll hand it back to you, Nick. Thank you.
Actually, I think it goes to Sarah for the next video. Is that correct, Sarah?
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Yeah, next up, we'll see a short video on Spot-On Networks before we hear from Dick Sherwin.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Next up is Dick Sherwin. Dick has been involved in wireless communications and radio frequency transmissions for the past 30 years. He is currently CEO of Spot-On Networks. Together with a number of telecommunications veterans, he founded and funded Spot-On Networks, a provider of wireless telecommunications for the multifamily residential and multi-tenant commercial building industry. Dick, take it away.
Nick, thanks very much. I hope the video gave some inkling of what we do. We're technology agnostic. We provide managed services in buildings. We specialize in wireless connectivity. We will use Wi-Fi. We will use a distributed antenna system. We will use CBRS. And we also offer public safety, as the video pointed out. In our experience, in-building technology is rapidly changing. Between LEED-certified buildings, which stop radio frequency from penetrating the building, and the changing technology, wireless connectivity has become somewhat problematic for building owners. We talk to building owners every day, and we understand from them that they need to figure out what's best for a particular building so that they can have their residents, tenants, and employees be able to connect wirelessly. It's so in demand. In fact, wireless connectivity has become a utility. It's one of the four: electricity, water, heat, and wireless connectivity. And there are some owners who are now saying maybe wireless connectivity is of top importance. They've begun to recognize the importance of high quality, seamless wireless connectivity. Some virtual network index statistics you see on the screen, I think that I don't want to delve into all of them, but suffice to say that developers and building owners now recognize that the amount of wireless data being passed has far exceeded any expectation 5 years ago. One of the most significant trends is that data traffic from Wi-Fi and mobile devices is projected to be 71% of total traffic by 2022. That's really remarkable. In addition, the Cisco VNI projects that by 2022, 75 megabit per second will be standard broadband speed. And that's something that's really important. Users are going to expect to see that speed when they're inside a building. I've been asked to speak about Wi-Fi 6. In order for me to do that, I thought I would try to lay out what the evolution of Wi-Fi is to somewhat reduce the confusion. This chart shows the evolution and the new naming convention for Wi-Fi. As you see, The Institute for Electrical and Electronics Engineers, IEEE, originally created the standard back in 2000 of 802.11, what is called 802.11. And that protocol offering occupied two sets of channels, two frequency ranges, 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. And I'll get to the difference in them in a minute. As you see, over the course of the last 20 years, Wi-Fi has gone from Wi-Fi 1 and 2 to Wi-Fi 6. What is significant? Wi-Fi 4, 5, and now Wi-Fi 6 operate in both the 2.4 and the 5 gigahertz bands. Why is that important? The lower the band, the more coverage and the greater range. The higher the band, generally speaking, the greater the capacity, but the less coverage and the less distance. Wi-Fi 6 will also operate in the 6 gigahertz band, what is called the mid-band, which the FCC is about to allocate to it. When that allocation occurs between what exists today in Wi-Fi and what will exist for Wi-Fi 6 at the 6 gigahertz band, will provide 10 times the radio frequency capacity for Wi-Fi than is cellular. Nick asked if Wi-Fi 6 is here to stay. The experts say yes. What's new? The new protocol offers higher capacity and greater speed and data capacity. It's geared for dense environments. There are a whole range of features, but in conjunction with a new technology known as MU MIMO, the new protocol provides increased capacity, greater speeds. In addition, there will be full backward compatibility. That means that unlike 5G, all the previous Wi-Fi devices will work on Wi-Fi 6 access points. There is a feature called multipath TCP that provides dual path communications via the cellular frequency as well as the Wi-Fi frequency. When a device is using a particular frequency and then that frequency disappears, person walks out of the building, the other frequency takes over. So that in essence, they're seamless between Wi-Fi and cellular. To give you an idea of the speed impact, Marvel Cinematic Universe, consisting of 22 films from the first Iron Man all the way to the Avengers Endgame, consists of about 48 hours of screen time. You see the difference between the original Wi-Fi at 29 hours and 16 minutes, and today on Wi-Fi 6, 2 hours and 40 minutes. That's a pretty significant difference. What are the experts saying? The experts are saying that they expect Wi-Fi 6 to be the in-building technology, the wireless local area network for in-buildings, and 5G is expected to be the wide area network facility. And Cisco basically reiterates that the features that are offered by Wi-Fi 6 are good for smart technology and good for all in-building capability. In summary, the Wi-Fi 6 offers a range of features that increases speed to 9.6 gigabits per second aggregate and increases device capacity. It is specifically geared to smart technology device support by reducing battery usage, and in-building capacity is increased greatly by adding spectrum and features helping future-proof a building for decades to come. Sarah?
Thank you, Dick. And next up, we have Alan Nee, and I'll let Nick do the intro for Alan.
Thank you. Thank you, Dick. Alan Nee is Global Director of Smart Spaces and IoT for Aruba, which is an HP enterprise company. He has over 15 years of technology and financial expertise with mobile computing. Alan's team is responsible for developing Aruba's Smart Spaces and Digital Workplace strategy. Alan, please take it away.
Thanks, Nick. As Nick had mentioned, I'm with Aruba. We are the Edge Technology Business Unit of Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. We are a big player in the enterprise networking space, and we are very involved with a lot of the standards body developments with Wi-Fi technology, along with a lot of the spectrum policy decisions at a national level. So my goal over the next few minutes is to kind of pick up where Dick left off with some of the evolution from a Wi-Fi 6 perspective, and then talk about some real-world applicability and some of the stats and some of the real-world data points that we're seeing with some of the early deployments of the technology. So let's jump into it. So right here, what you'll see is probably a more visual representation of what Dick had walked through. And probably the key piece I want to talk about is the fact that, you know, as an industry from a Wi-Fi perspective, we've gotten away from naming the technology by the IEEE name to this new name, Wi-Fi 6, Wi-Fi 5, Wi-Fi 4. So in 2018, when we released our first product, at the time it was labeled 802.11ax. Wi-Fi 6 was also just introduced as a naming convention. And what we've seen is you're seeing a lot of the products now being named as Wi-Fi 6 and subsequently Wi-Fi 7, et cetera. There's a lot more marketing going into it. You're seeing a lot more mainstream press talk to it. It's just a lot more easier for the layman to understand. And that's pretty significant for us because, you know, for folks like yourselves, doing the thought leadership and making you understand all of the different options that you have within a building is super important. The next piece I want to talk about is some of these peak speeds are really achieved by both technology, as Dick had just mentioned, and spectrum. And from a technology perspective, you know, for two decades, you know, whether you follow the track with Wi-Fi based technology, which is in blue, or kind of the green, which is more of the traditional cellular track with 2G through 5G, what you'll see is a lot of cross-barring of technology back and forth. And as Dick mentioned, OFDMA technology, which is the underlying technology that powers both 4G and 5G, is the same technology that powers Wi-Fi 6. And that's really, really important. So that's what's getting us the tremendous gains in capacity and speed that we're seeing on these current day networks. As I mentioned, and as he mentioned, another huge piece of speed and reliability is spectrum. Spectrum is the lifeblood of any wireless technology. And with Wi-Fi, the fundamental difference between Wi-Fi and cellular-based technologies is the type of spectrum we use and how we actually use it. And with Wi-Fi, it's unlicensed-based technology. So since 2000, all the existing generations of Wi-Fi have effectively used both the 2.4 and 5 gigahertz band. So that's about 800 megahertz worth of spectrum. And since that, for two decades, those have principally been the entire spectrum that we've been available to. The FCC and number of global bodies are looking at new spectrum in the 6 gigahertz band, which more than doubles, 2.5 times increases the capacity of unlicensed, right? And so you think about this. This is very significant for the industry. You're going to start hearing a new term called Wi-Fi 6E. E is an enhanced, basically referring to infrastructure and endpoints that are capable of accessing the 6 gigahertz band. 6 gigahertz is also really important in that it will be a greenfield band. One of the unique capabilities of Wi-Fi is the ability to have a legacy client, an older client, still access newer generation networks. So I could have a Wi-Fi 4 client access a Wi-Fi 6 network. That's super important as you think about it as landlords in the environment. Unlike our phones, a lot of the IoT devices going into buildings do not have a 3 or 4 year refresh cycle, right? While we might bite our tongues, things may last for a decade or longer in some cases, and you want to have that backwards compatibility. And why that's something that's unique to Wi-Fi in that it can support that. But this is super important. The FCC has all but said that they want to provide more spectrum, not just for licensed, but unlicensed. Then we're working with some big heavy hitters in the terms of, you know, Google, Facebook, Apple, Cisco, ourselves, to make sure that there's more spectrum available. Actually, in the UK, Ofcom actually made a brief proposal to actually open up the 6 gigahertz space for the UK. We anticipate the US to follow very, 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 very soon. So now I want to talk a little bit about some real-world use cases of Wi-Fi 6. Oftentimes we hear, you know, when people just think about Wi-Fi, they think it's slow, it's insecure, it's congested. Aruba is a market share leader in this space. We have almost 30 to 40% of the actual commercial deployments of Wi-Fi 6 technology. I want to bring and just show you some of the interesting stats we're seeing from a specific venue. This happens to be a large public venue in a stadium at Ohio State. Not many stadiums get bigger than Ohio State. It's over 100,000 seat stadium, if you're familiar with that. And, you know, when we think about commercial office and think about capacity, you know, this is where things start to really be stressed, stress tested. So anyway, Ohio State deployed a 2,000 access point network, serious backhaul, and you can kind of see just the existing speeds on the loaded network. You're seeing some pretty fabulous speeds with legacy clients on this new network, 50 up, 50 down. You know, you see some of the DAS stats. In October of last year, it actually hit a huge milestone in that it exceeded every other stadium, including Super Bowls up to date, with the amount of traffic for a regular season collegiate game with 25.6 terabytes worth of data. The other interesting fact here is that there were 75,000 connections of the 100,000 attendees that made it through Wi-Fi. And here, the stadium was actually using some automatic offload, cellular offload technology to achieve that, so that users didn't need to pick the network. They were on a secure Wi-Fi network, and you know, they were able to make calls or do texts or data through that. For baseline, the Super Bowl of all events usually is the Super Bowl itself. And as you can kind of see what just happened in Miami a few weeks ago, the Wi-Fi network there just barely eked out the stat that we established in October, although it's not apples to apples. Super Bowl usually a multi-day sort of event, right? But what you could see is that the actual connections were far fewer. We don't believe they were running past point on this network. And then you could kind of see what some of the major tier one carriers were advertising as well during that day event in and around the stadium. And Verizon's case, I think this also looped in some of their 5G stats as well, perhaps that 5G camera on the field, et cetera. But hopefully this could give you some real-world stats to make you aware that this technology is indeed very capable, very reliable, very fast, and is a very viable option as we think about next-generation in-building technology. So with that, we've done a lot of thought leadership around this topic and how we believe it's complementary. If you're interested, feel free to go to our website. And with that, I'm going to hand it back to Sarah. Thanks.
Thank you, Alan. Next up, we have John Dooling from Corning. And before we hear from him, let's watch a short video.
Great. Thank you, Alan. Next up is John. John is Vice President, Market Development at Corning. He is a 30-year global telecom and enterprise executive and has held senior positions in product management, marketing, and sales in the areas of fiber optics, wireless, and new technology development. Currently with Corning, John is focused on introducing its fiber optic and wireless innovations to the real estate, commercial real estate market. So, John, please take it away.
Well, thank you very much, Nick, and good morning, good afternoon, everyone. As Nick said, I'm John Doolin with Corning. I spend my days and times focusing on technology and innovation directly with commercial real estate developers, building owners, and managers. I want to thank Sarah and the RealCom team for setting this webinar up. Thanks, Nick, for being our moderator, and finally, thanks to the panelists who are going to be on this very important webinar. As we've heard in previous presentations, the 5G evolution, revolution, is certainly, as we stated, not only on the horizon, many argue it's already here. Some say the future has come. This 5G revolution we're discussing promises a hyper-fast, a low latency, and high bandwidth network. And it's really part of this seismic shift that we're seeing in in-building cellular and outside plant. But how do we get to this 5G revolution? It starts always, like all the Gs before 5G, it starts with the outside plant networks that our carrier partners, of which we have a couple members on the panel today, are doing today, like 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G. 5G networks start in the outside plant. Currently, our carrier partners are deploying tens of millions of miles of our fiber and tens of thousands of cell sites as they build out what they call the macro network. What this means for all of us is the 5G macro network is getting closer and closer to buildings, places where we work, live, and play. It's also running into a challenge that many of us have already seen. As the buildings are getting close, as the networks are getting closer to the buildings, the building designs led by LEED and smart building technology, energy reduction, the construction materials and design have a major impact on how cellular works inside of buildings. And it's only going to get worse or more challenging with the frequencies and the requirements of 5G. Simply put, 5G is going to have a tough time getting in and around our building. And so we have to address that going forward, and we also have to address another thing facing us. That is, as our carrier customers are building and spending tens of billions of dollars building out the macro, and as the ecosystems are preparing the technology required to get that signal in the macro and into our buildings, the funding available to get the signal in and around the building has become a challenge, and it's only going to continue. There is hope, however. Like many of my other colleagues have said earlier in their presentations, it's time to look at in-building wireless as a strategic asset. And this is a message, I think, for all the developers and owners and operators. How do you plan for a network that is fiber rich, which we believe is absolutely required for 5G, get it built into performance, budget for and plan for this strategic asset in your buildings? We're talking about doing this work way up front in a development cycle, before, in many cases, the building is even built. It is our belief 5G starts with, the issue with 5G, we believe, is not necessarily the wireless piece, it's the wires. We recommend and are working with many of our customers, you start with the base plan of a deep fiber network. Fiber optic cable has virtually unlimited capacity to handle all the frequencies required down the road. Further, we can design and help work, as we do today with our customers, to lay out a fiber infrastructure. Furthermore, working with our small cell and our DAS platforms and the work we're doing in our next generation of those platforms, helping our developer and building owner customers on planning and budgeting for 5G, because when the network gets to the building, we've got to make sure that system gets inside the building. And finally, I just want to leave you with this. 5G is definitely coming. It's going to take on forms like CBRS, potentially private LTE, and certainly carrier grade 5G into buildings. I want to make an offer out to our participants. We would be more than willing to share with you our work we've done with many developers, with our integrator partners, and with our carrier partners on helping you plan for, budget for, and design for 5G, because it's a matter of time that it's going to be required inside of your buildings. And with that, I'll pass it on back to Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Next up, we will actually go into a panel discussion with all the panelists on the webinar, and I'll give it over back to Nick.
Thank you. John, thank you. You actually had me very excited there for a second. I thought you were going to offer free fiber, but I guess not. But we'll take the survey, I guess. So with that, you know, thank you for our four panelists and resources. We have an additional three resources that we're very fortunate to have for the discussion, for this roundtable, if you will, Q&A. First is Carl Bussineau. He's Director of Radio Access Network for AT&T in the New York, New Jersey metro area. In his role, he's responsible for overall design, optimization, and performance of AT&T's wireless voice and data network. Next is Luke Lucas. He's a Senior Manager, National 5G Smart and In-Building Coverage at T-Mobile. That's one heck of a title to fit on a little business card there, Luke. He manages the Build Your Own Coverage program for T-Mobile USA. He's focused in on enterprise and in-building coverage, furthering the role of wireless in buildings as a fifth utility-like service. And lastly, John Morris, who's CEO of Ballast Networks. John has over 20 years' experience in the telecommunications industry, primarily working at the intersection of real estate and technology. He was a founder of the Antenna Solutions Group at AT&T in 2011, and since then he has developed distributed antenna systems, small cell, and related business models and contracts. So with that, I'll start with the last person to introduce here was John. John, I want to definitely get to Luke and Carl, but what's your take on, you know, the topic itself, the timing, the value add, and then could you also opine on the standards and where we are with setting standards for this technology?
Sure. Thanks for having me. So a few things, you know, I think certainly when it comes to 5G in an in-building, you know, setting, I think there's a lot of different, you know, avenues that we can look at. But I think timing is a big deal in terms of when a lot of the technologies for 5G are truly shareable, whether that's, you know, millimeter wave antennas or other kind of 5G technologies that need to be implemented. And I think ultimately what a building owner wants, what real estate owners want, is to have a quality of service and the kind of speeds and quality of service that they can count on for the people that are in their buildings. And so I think, you know, from where I sit, the timing of a lot of the 5G deployments in an in-building setting are going to take a little bit of time. I think some of the things that you were talking about earlier in your presentation around pilots, I think, are really the most important thing in terms of validating some of these new technologies, proving them out so that as 5G gets rolled out in a lot of these buildings, we can ensure that there's no hiccups, you know, at individual locations. I think there's a lot of value add when it comes to things like private LTE that were mentioned earlier, because with private LTE, there's a lot of tasks, there's a lot of connectivity that building owners can use to solve a lot of their issues from a IoT perspective, whether that's sustainability initiatives like Local Law 97, and a kind of a myriad of other kind of use cases. And so I think we're at a nice inflection point where we can start putting in place a number of these new technologies, deal with some of the convergence of RAN and IT, and bring some of those costs down as these systems are being deployed, and really create a lot of value for both you know, landlords like yourself and for the carriers as well. So we're very excited about this, and I think, you know, this webinar should be, you know, pretty educational and kind of working through that.
Great. I agree with lots of what you said. It is still a technology that's coming into focus. I think pilots, you know, like we're trying to do here in order to see if it really works and how does it work and how is it different. Look, all the years we've done in-building cell here at Vornado, it was very straightforward. We dealt directly with the carriers, and it was a sort of a set it and forget it in many ways. We would get it built with the carriers, and there really wasn't much to do afterwards outside of monitoring it. CBRS, to me, is more complex. You know, do you think also, and I don't know if you touched on it, do you think third parties would be more of a requirement in terms of managing this new infrastructure? Is that something that, you know, John or anyone else on the panel sees as more of a requirement in terms of making that that transition and the offering more successful?
So I'll let others interact as well on this, but I would say that for some of the new networks, particularly for private LTE, CBRS, you know, it really depends on the sophistication of the landlord. Certainly, you know, Nick, yourself, your team has been at the forefront and understanding a lot of these technologies and how these technologies work in the building. You've got a number of LEED certified buildings. I think going forward, it really depends on, you know, how those mechanisms in terms of funding, who's paying for it, and how those systems are put in place are managed. And I think for most people, I think for most companies, you're going to need somebody like a managed service provider, whether that's something that's carrier sponsored or whether that's dealt with by somebody like one of the people on this call or myself or some of the other companies out there. I don't think it'll be a resurgence of necessarily traditional third-party providers, though. It's going to be a much more of a managed service offering for the enterprise.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking. Luke, if I can turn to you. So you manage the Build Your Own Coverage program. How do you promote in-building technology in real estate? I mean, it's, you know, part of it, I think, is organic from the tenants and the needs from the tenants, but how do you and how does T-Mobile approach really promoting more of that throughout this this industry?
Well, thanks, Nick, for that question. We really look at it from an aspect of, you know, with all the hype and the marketing, let's put that aside for a minute. And I think a number of this morning's speakers have touched on it. It's really preparing your real estate for any G in the future. And I think, as John indicated just moments ago, you know, depending on the level of sophistication of the landlord or the property operator in our minds, what is the goal? And once you set that goal, if that becomes an element of smart, to create the building as smart, and that definition is going to be sole, separate, independent, and custom to that landlord or that property owner. But once they set that goal, Nick, then I think they need to look at the real estate and say, what am I going to do to provision this property? So we advocate in a very generic fashion. One, you need all the carriers in the building, period. This is not a T-Mobile only or a T-Mobile exclusive. You need all the carriers because you don't know who's coming through there. And with that, how do you prepare your property? You're going to increase your power when and where you can. So if you're doing a remodel, a new construction, upgrade your power to make sure that you're not just minimizing the power requirement, but you're maximizing that. Second, run plenty of conduit with pull strings, more than you need, beyond what your architect may suggest and what the builder may even quote on your final quote for construction. Add more fiber. I think John, Jeff, Dick, Allen, they all talked about, you know, making sure that there's ample fiber, because those are the two points from end to end that you're going to be connecting the boxes, regardless of the G. So, and last but not least, pull more, plenty of Ethernet. That is how we believe that you can provision your real estate for any G at any time. And as evolution evolves, with technology, it's going to be similar to what everybody has gotten very used to. Even my dad, my brothers have all said, oh, Luke, I have Ethernet. I plug the cable into the new Wi-Fi box. And every 2 or 3 years, I go to Best Buy and buy a new one. Great. Same model for technology on the cellular side. We just want to make sure that there's ample resources to support it.
Right. That's a good point. And what we're trying to do is, you know, whenever we do, and it's very few and far between, we have greenfield installations, but we do try to run extra fiber and extra cabling because I don't know what tomorrow will bring. And, you know, the cost of pulling some extra fibers is certainly a lot less than, you know, adding a few to the existing workload, right? So if I can, thank you, Luke. So if I can go to Carl for a second. So Carl, you're with AT&T, and AT&T, I think, was the first ones that had this 5GE, which, you know, is, I don't know what that is, but.
A little controversial, right?
A little bit. So if you can describe, there's different, I guess, different flavors of 5G, if you can describe what they are. And additionally, if you can also talk about, you know, I happen to have a number of 4G LTE systems that are neutral host, but for the folks that either have one or may not have any, what does it take in my terms of owning these systems, what does it take to get to 5G? So if you could start with sort of the flavors of 5G first, and then what may it take to get to 5G on the existing systems, that would be great. I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure, absolutely. So good question, right? So you if you have AT&T service, you've probably seen this 5GE on your phone, and really what that stands for is 5G evolution. And basically, and from a technical standpoint, that's really our 4G, our latest and greatest version of 4G. Okay, so I kind of call it 4.9G. Okay, because over time, 4G has evolved, right? So every year, the standard allows 4G to get faster and faster and faster and have more and more features every year, right? So we're basically at the edge of 4G, right? So we're at the last, pretty much the end of 4G, and 5G is now starting, right? So we're at, like I said, I call it 4.9G. So our 4.9G, we're actually calling 5G evolution. So we're evolving to 5G. And then we're starting this year, actually started last year, we started deploying what we call 5G, which is, the technical term is 5G sub-6. So it's the new 5G standard, technical standard called NR, which stands for Next Radio. That's the technology, the waveform, the protocol that's being sent out today. You have to have a special phone to support that. Okay, so the newer phones that are starting to come out support the new 5G sub-6 standard. So that's basically it's taking our old spectrum that we had before that we used for 3G and 4G, and we're moving that over to 5G. Okay, so it's just that the old spectrum is now going to have these new protocols that are being sent out. Okay, there's going to be some new features associated with that. One is that it's going to be able to support a lot more capacity, so a lot more simultaneous connecting to the network. That's one of the features, and that's great for IoT because now they're talking about anything and everything connecting to the internet, and when everything and anything connects to the internet, that's a lot of you need a lot of capacity to support that, right? So that's one of the features of what 5G is bringing. Another feature 5G is bringing is very low latency. So people ask, okay, well, what is low latency really do, right? And what are some of the applications of low latency? Probably the biggest, the three biggest that come to my mind is augmented reality, virtual reality, doing that, right? Because you need low latency to be able to support augmented and virtual reality. And then they're talking about connected cars eventually, but also gaming. You know, if anybody has kids that play some of these fancy games out there like Fortnite and Call of Duty, they'll tell you they need very low latency when they play these games. So you can see that now starting to evolve, right, and becoming more of a wireless play as opposed to today you have to be connected through your Ethernet cable, right? So with those features, that's what 5G is bringing, right? The ability to do some of those things. So again, that's on our 5G, the regular 5G symbol that you'll see on the phone is our sub-6. So again, the spectrum that we moved over from 3G to 4G. Then the third 5G that AT&T is going to have is what's called 5G Plus. Okay, that's where we're using brand new spectrum that's been made available in the last couple of years, which is millimeter wave spectrum, very, very high frequency spectrum, lots and lots of bandwidth, but very, very little coverage, okay? So, and when I say lots and lots of bandwidth, we are literally seeing over a gigabit per second speeds on this millimeter wave spectrum. Okay. The challenge is it doesn't cover very far. Like it literally, if you get a quarter mile out of it, it's a lot, right? So it's got a lot of challenges, doesn't penetrate into buildings, but the speed is absolutely amazing. So that's the difference between the three 5Gs. We've got 5GE, which is 4.9G. We got the first start of 5G, which is our sub-6, which we're deploying more widespread. We're going to have 5G Plus, which is going to be very, very specific, very key areas. In hotspots, you might say. Now the question is, which one would we put would be supported on a traditional DAS? Basically, 5GE and 5G itself. So those two technologies will work without any issues on the new on your old DAS. Okay. If you want to do 5G Plus, at that point you're going to need some additions to that.
Right. So that was, thank you. I mean, there's really no way of making it sort of a one-sentence answer. I mean, you know, I think this is the reason for the webinar. That was an answer from, you know, someone who was, you know, a professional at this stuff in terms of a technical resource. And, you know, as a landlord, you know, my head's spinning a little bit. Like, what you know, does it come down to the last sentence where the 5GE, where the 5G is where I can get to, and it sounds like that is, and I think there's, you know, some other modules or radios that I can add to my existing equipment, but if I started new, what do I look like in terms of what does the installation look like in terms of being around the corner for 5G, and, you know, go back to what I think Luke had said regarding the fiber, which I'm sure John would be happy with, add more fiber to make sure that, you know, you're covered. I think that's always a safe bet. So thank you, Carl. If I can go back.
Can I interject something?
Absolutely.
This is Dick Sherwin again. I think there's a piece missing that I think is important for the building owner. I agree with Luke, and I agree with you that the more fiber, the more Cat 6 you can put into a building, the better off you are. But I think the most important thing is this. The Wireless Broadband Alliance and the Next Generation Mobile Network Alliance, which consists of all of the service providers around the world, are trying to cooperate to drive convergence of 5G and Wi-Fi 6 and Wi-Fi 6 beyond. And I think that's really important because what that says is each building owner can take a selection of from a menu of what is required for that specific building, which may include things like user experience, smart home technology, and so forth, and make the selection of what technology they need in their building for the decades to come.
Okay.
Luke, I completely agree with Dick.
Yeah, and it's Alan here, just to kind of add to it, you know, and maybe the question before. You know, I think at the end of the day, we're talking about buildings here. These all have incredibly long lifespans, right? And I think with this whole narrative is really the expectation of the tenant, right? I think all this, you know, whether you call it hype or not, I think we all can agree that the expectation is that when tenants move in, or even for the base building owners, you know, more and more devices are going to come in connected wirelessly. Right, in some shape or form, and there are going to be more and more applications that are going to count on a connection that's increasingly more secure and quicker and faster, right? And the technology is going to continue to evolve, right? Carl and I were chuckling before, you know, what G is it? 5G, you know, in 3-4 years we'll be talking about 6G or 7G, right? So I think some of the bases, right, fiber, you know, making sure to think about that you have some sort of routes in your ceilings, in that, you know, on a 4, 5 year, 6 year cycle, you're going to have to replace those nodes with newer nodes that are increasingly more capable. That's what you need to drive into the mindset. And then really the last piece that Dick just mentioned, right, I didn't have a chance to cover it, is that, you know, Wi-Fi 6 and 5G, they're kind of been on parallel tracks. One of the big things in 5G that's starting to change within 3GPP, which is kind of the governing body, is the separation of the core network from the radio access network. And there's a lot of development being driven by Wireless Broadband Alliance with 3GPP, et cetera, to say that, hey, Wi-Fi 6 or 7 or whatever it is, you know, or any other sort of radio technology could also drive into a 5G core. So at the end of the day, what the end user cares about are the services that they're getting, so that the services are consistent, whatever, you know, whether I'm coming over CBRS, I'm coming over a 5G kind of carrier network, Wi-Fi, what mm-hmm. have you. So I just mm-hmm. thought that'd be interesting to bring up.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you. Can I, as John Doolin here, I'll pile onto the discussion a little bit, and also add there's a technology evolution that needs to happen as well. You know, as an example, to get, Carl, you mentioned millimeter wave. So companies like Corning and others are heavily involved with the development of small cell and DAS technologies to incorporate the next generation frequencies, including millimeter wave. We just announced a joint, it's quite a big deal with Qualcomm for our millimeter wave platform. And, you know, we have to deal with existing infrastructure, fiber and all the powering you need out to the edge. And then if you've got an existing cellular system and they're small cell DAS or even Wi-Fi, how do you get that upgraded without disrupting your fancy new buildings? You don't want to tear up Penn 1, as an example, 5 years from now when you've just remodeled the whole thing, right? So how do we help you by designing and laying out the physical infrastructure, but help you understand the roadmap of the technology, the cellular side of distributing that next generation millimeter wave without a major reconstruct? That's what we're really working on at Corning.
Right, and look, it's so important to get it right, you know, or as close to being right as you can in my world. It's very expensive to do any type of work in New York City, especially if it's after hours, overnight, things like that, so we don't disrupt the tenants. So we do want to install a product or service that will be, you know, will have a long lifeline, right? So making sure that we do it right the first time, it is very expensive. It's very important that we do this properly. So that's part of sort of the push here to 5G, but it's not like we can just do it and it'll be covered 100% and I don't have to really worry about it. It's not like that, right? The environment has changed, in which we're doing things. We are doing major renovations in Penn Plaza, and we do want to get this right the first time. So if I can, there was a question that was asked regarding carrier offloading to landlords, and we spoke about this. I spoke about this a little bit. What does the panel think in terms of what the potential revenue could be in carrier offloading to a landlord? Do you think it would be, of course, it depends on the venue. And Alan, I would have been a lot more impressed if it was, you know, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where my daughter graduated from, other than Ohio State, but that's okay. You didn't do Bryant-Denny Stadium. That's all right. But, you know, it really matters, I think. Not yet. But I know people there. Maybe we can figure something out. But it really does matter what venue you're doing this at. But, you know, what's the panel's view for the potential value to a landlord for carrier offloading? That's open to everybody.
Well, Nick, this
can
is
you more spec, what do you mean by carrier offloading? What's that?
Well, I think it's regarding private LTE.
Yeah, and
the definition of carrier offload is if the carrier offloads data inside a building for a fee. So if a building owner puts an LTE, a CBRS system in, as an example, and the carrier then offloads data onto that CBRS system, will the carrier pay the building owner a fee?
Correct. That's what I believe it will be.
So far in the United States, carriers have chosen not to do that.
I was just gonna
make one quick comment, and that is, I think it's important to talk about data offload as opposed to roaming and other things, because data offload has been happening, whether it's Marriott or Hilton or Boingo, you know, for the last couple years. And so, you know, today it's already happening. The question of, you know, who pays and how much is paid and some of those other questions, and whether it's offload onto Wi-Fi or private LTE, I think is pretty relevant. But I think, you know, I'd love to hear Carl's perspective, but I look at it more as a data offload in terms of dealing with peak traffic and peak demand that allow these different technologies to be implemented most cost effectively and, you know, create a very kind of symbiotic relationship ultimately between the carriers, the landlords, and some of these other ecosystem participants. So I want to hand it back, but I definitely wanted to say that the, practically speaking, data offload has been taking place for the last couple of years for multiple carriers, not just AT&T.
Yeah, John.
This is Jeff Hipshin. I agree with what John's saying. We've experienced that in a lot of customers that we're dealing with are anxious to deploy a private LTE network because they can deploy it on a less costly fashion, and anticipating soon that the voice roaming and transfer on and off the network will happen later this year.
Yeah, this is Carl Bosnow from AT&T. So as John mentioned, we are doing it today. We're doing it through Wi-Fi. A system called Passpoint is something that AT&T is very actively involved in, and I believe other carriers are as well. And it basically does exactly what John said. During peak times, we can set up certain thresholds. We can set up different ways that it will work. But we have the ability to send our own customers to a landlord's Wi-Fi system to offload our existing network, you know, in-building network, however we may do it. So there's a lot of ways of doing it, and it is something that we have looked at today. It's possible we could do it with a CBRS system. It's not out of the question. As carriers, we're constantly looking for more cost-effective ways of providing the network, and if it makes sense and there's value to it and the customer experience is good, then absolutely that'd be something we'd be very, very interested in.
Okay.
Yes, Alan here, and to Carl's point, we are working with AT&T at them, just a real use case, and not just Ohio State, but there's very, very significant Wi-Fi deployments across a lot of universities. And if you think about those campuses, they have hundreds of buildings, right? And in that case, we've done at a number of very large universities offload, AT&T traffic. We're authenticating the SIM card. We're getting them onto the Wi-Fi network. They're delivering Wi-Fi calling and all their data services over that pipe. Just a really good example of it, right? So I don't think there's a single answer. It really depends on the situation. So
right, and there's a likelihood that the same thing
with Wi-Fi and private LTE,
right,
as well as others.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say there's a likelihood that it'll just continue to grow in the future, is my assumption, but time will tell. So, Alan, if I could ask you, I think you were one of the biggest proponents of Wi-Fi 6 in terms of your presentation. What are the cyber-related issues? You know, LTE is inherently more secure than Wi-Fi, and Wi-Fi 6, I believe, is, you know, the latest and greatest and faster and more secure. But what are the, as a landlord that currently, you know, we have Wi-Fi in our property management offices for our employees, and they can, you know, access the corporate network from their laptops if they're in meetings and things like that. We don't really have it for anyone else, and there may be a plaza or a luncheon area outside that will have free Wi-Fi, just, you know, a pipe to the internet. But is that something that, you know, going forward with Wi-Fi 6 is cybersecurity? I mean, how, obviously it's extremely important, but should I be concerned about, you know, doing Wi-Fi 6 and having more cybersecurity issues and concerns?
Yeah, I think cyber is a huge, huge issue. And I think it's less about, frankly, whether it's Wi-Fi 6 or 5G, but it's really more of the capability of the end device, right? And IoT is really the biggest one here. So if you think about the building, and I think there was a question that actually popped in. I was just going to respond to it, but I'm probably just going to respond to here. The vast majority of the systems are connecting wirelessly, whether it's the lighting, people sensor counters, you know, camera-based systems, et cetera. Those devices are coming in through Wi-Fi, maybe Ethernet. You're starting to see Zigbee, Bluetooth pop up. Many of them are also connecting to a gateway, right? And these gateways are now going out LTE, et cetera. But the underlying sensor, for the most part, doesn't have a SIM card in it and it's connecting to the network. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where the security really needs to pay attention to that. And I know definitely on the Wi-Fi side, there's been an evolution. At home, many of you guys may use a standard called WPA2. And those work well, you know, in the enterprise cases. Those are extremely secure. You know, we're using them for top secret networks, et cetera. At home, it's really more built for ease of use, so PSKs, you know, those pre-shared keys that you're using, which are not as secure, right? And unfortunately, due to the ease of use and need for provisioning, a lot of the IoT devices are kind of getting provisioned over, you know, a pre-shared key. We've been working with the industry to introduce WPA3, which is now part of the Wi-Fi 6 certification, you know, really ups the ante for these kind of headless devices, how you provision them. You know, there's something called DPP, which is Device Provisioning Protocol, where you could use a QR code, and the QR code is based off certificates to be able to strongly authenticate a device, right? So not just having the device communicate securely, but can I provision the device in a secure manner, right? And I think these are all really real improvements that I think are going to help, you know, any building owner, as you start thinking about connecting more and more systems to a network, help. Because as I mentioned, you know, the vast majority of some of these systems in many cases don't connect through, you know, they're connecting to some gateway. It could be an access point that a commercial building owner may put in. It could be a gateway that, you know, in turn connects to an LTE connection. So, you know, that's pretty cool. And then, you know, on the 5G or 4G side, you know, I think some of the inherent benefits is just it's a closed network, right? But to provision it, you have to look at your workflows, right? How do I provision a device? You know, do I do it through a web portal? Do I have to call someone? Am I, you know, is that open to kind of social attacks, you know, et cetera? You know, you have the same issues, you know, regardless of the technology. I argue on the wireless side too, you know, if someone has the wrong keys or whatever, you can get in. So these are all factors we need to think about, but we're definitely...
But client isolation platform would help in that situation. I agree with you, Alan, but client isolation is a key issue, and it's true no matter which wireless connectivity platform you use.
And those technologies all exist, right? And I think a lot of it's just understanding best practices to make sure that you enable that, right? So that if you're on a guest network, you don't see everyone else, and everyone else doesn't see you. But yes, agreed.
Great. Thank you, guys. There's another question that came into us, and I think it's, you know, I can relate to this. We were installing an in-building cell system in a property in California, and they were very concerned about the in-building antennas and health concerns. There's a question regarding health concerns with 5G. Now, I believe that the millimeter wave, the antennas, at least initially, were very powerful, and they had to be perhaps 30 or 40 feet. You needed a ceiling that it wasn't in close proximity. Can we talk about, you know, is that still the case? Are there now low power that, you know, can do millimeter or just in general the 5G antennas, and what may or may not be the truths around any potential health concerns regarding that?
Yeah, Nick, this is Carl. So let me try and answer that. So when, as I mentioned before, one of the challenges with millimeter wave is it just doesn't cover very far, right? So one of the ways to make it cover a little further is to give it more power. The first millimeter wave antennas were designed to be used outdoors. And so, you know, you have this extra power to get you as much coverage as possible, and it's outdoors. Well, now people started asking, hey, can we put some of this millimeter wave indoors? Well, yeah, you can, but, you know, we have to reduce the power if we're going to do that. They're not really designed to be for indoors, and they're starting now to become lower power and you know, address all the concerns. But at the end of the day, any of the carriers, I've worked for many of them, will not deploy something that does not meet the FCC guidelines. So every carrier makes sure that we do follow all the FCC guidelines for RF emission safety. So, and one of the ways of doing that is just by lowering the power.
And this is John. I'll add on to that. And, of course, as companies like Corning is developing the in-building small cell DAS type equipment, we are, of course, working hand in hand with the carriers, and everything that we are developing, we're developing with them, and of course to the same standards. And certainly there's a robust government looking at this, as well as, you know, that the carriers have decades and decades of experience, as do we. And, you know, we're going to certainly not put people inside of buildings at risk with the next generation 5G.
For sure. And like I said, we've done a fair number of installations, and when we went out to the property we have in California, it was really the first time anyone had, you know, looked and to really, that one of the tenants had asked about the antennas. And I shrugged my shoulders. I said, I don't know. I have to find out, which we did, and, you know, we did install it. But, you know, there will be pockets of, especially with new technology, and again, Carl, where you sort of started on the outside and bringing it inside, the unknowns are always present. So, you know, that's just a box to check off in terms of, you know, moving forward with this, at least as a landlord it is. What else, gentlemen? You know, I think,
Real quickly, Nick, I had heard some, and Carl, I just want to know maybe if you can confirm this or not, but I had heard that in some of these in-building settings we're seeing some signage requirements for like maybe 8 feet of separation from, you know, for the millimeter wave antennas. Have you heard of that? Just as a matter of course, while we're having conversations.
Yeah, it's just more being ultra conservative. We do power the systems down so that they are set at the right power, so they are not harmful. Unfortunately, because they're first generation products, their software, the power is brought down by software, and anybody could, there's a possibility, and it's a very unlikely possibility, there's a possibility that someone can go in software-wise and change the power and adjust it higher. So because of that, they put these signs up to say, you know, stay far away from it just in case. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks for, I just had heard it, so I just thought maybe you could address it. Thanks.
Yeah, that next generation of equipment that's actually designed for in-building is going to limit, truly limit the power, so you can't increase it at all.
Okay. Thank you, guys. You know, let's just, we have a few more minutes left. There's another question, which, you know, we do a lot of, we have a lot of technology in our buildings that's really right now wired, and it is IP cameras. There's actually some facial recognition that we've been using, turnstiles and HVAC systems and things like that. Have you seen, have any of you seen any type of leader out there in the industry that would be, you know, building new components that are 5G or private LTE compatible? Like I said, I think the private LTE will be in the IoT area first. And, you know, moving forward, if we have an option to either run a cable or a fiber line to an IP camera, sorry, John, we might do a private LTE if we ever get that far, right? But has, you know, have any of you seen a manufacturer that's really on the forefront of developing some equipment that will run in these new technologies?
Yeah, Nick, this is Jeff Hipshin. There are camera manufacturers and others that are have them underway right now. So it's forthcoming, and in those cases where you have the need that doesn't support the equipment currently, there's products like CradlePoint and Multitech that offer gateways that will convert both public and private LTE signals to Wi-Fi, as an example.
Right.
Yeah.
Most of the manufacturers that we've dealt with are providing devices that are Wi-Fi enabled, as opposed to CBRS or 5G.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is Alan here. So my day job, my team actually spends a lot of time looking at this, really more on the endpoints and the evolution here. So kind of to my comments, and I think to kind of back up Jeff, we've seen like a lot of the devices are probably more of the gateways, and you know, CradlePoint's definitely one that has like talked about, you know, 5G, CBRS, other gateways that not just have connectivity, but those gateways also may have some edge compute in them that potentially could have a SIM card, you know, or eSIM to get out of the network through, you know, some 4G or 5G sort of technology. It doesn't surprise me that some of the camera manufacturers, and when I talk about cameras, the larger cameras that are more security oriented, may have a native kind of 4G or 5G sort of option, but the vast majority of other building IoT sort of technologies that we're seeing in that are going into buildings now. So these are things like air quality sensors, ambient light sensors, smart lighting. Those are actually not favoring 5G. They're not even favoring Wi-Fi, to be honest, in many cases. Many of them are starting to go Bluetooth 5 or Zigbee 15.4 that will hit a gateway, kind of like that cradle point or an access point to go out, right? So a lot of the IoT devices, the bigger ones that you don't have that many in a building may go out, you know, something like 4G, 5G native, Wi-Fi. The things that you're starting to see a lot more numbers of, you know, if you need to put camera vision sensors in a very dense sort of manner, they're not going out of any of the technology we talked about today.
Got it. Okay. All right, thank you. We have a few minutes left, Sarah. And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I think that, you know, when you're looking at, I think one of the speakers had something where they were talking about heterogeneous networks, and I do think that it, you know, in terms of the platform and the specific use cases for what you're trying to accomplish in a building, in a geography, you know, are a big deal, because I don't think there's one technology that necessarily solves everything. You know, for a lot of people, you need multiple technologies to do that.
Okay, thank you, John.
I'll obviously echo that one.
All right, Sarah, I think we have a few minutes left, and what I was going to say, if there's anything else the panel wanted to bring up or discuss in the remaining few minutes, we can do that now. If not, Sarah, I turn it back over to you.
All right, maybe what we could do is just give each panelist 30 seconds to just provide their advice for all the landlords on the call. What should be their next step, or what would you tell them what they should do in preparation for 5C or Wi-Fi 6? So maybe we'll start with Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. I'll finish with how I started. It's as I indicated, and you know, we just kind of wrapped up the general panel session. Is, you know, it's our position that it's not either Wi-Fi or 5G or private LTE. It should be taken a look at all of the above, and that's in the toolkit, as well as funding is becoming a key factor in everything. So again, it's back to a heterogeneous wireless toolkit and rely on somebody that has that expertise and is dealing with those things on a day-to-day basis to be a trusted advisor to help you. Thank you.
Thanks. Dick?
Well, I agree with Jeff. I also think that Luke's point about making sure there's enough cabling and enough conduit available is a critical issue. My agreement with Jeff is if you're building a new building, a greenfield, get a low voltage or an RF wireless connectivity professional into the building plans as soon as possible, because we think that's critical to making sure that the building is future-proofed.
Perfect. Alan?
Great, thanks. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of discussion up to date, right, around providing great kind of wireless coverage, cellular coverage, and we most think about that in terms of having our cell phones. But as landlords think about the future building and making tenant improvements to not only improve the user experience for cell phone calls, but, you know, start to add more building IoT into it to modernize the building from an efficiency or user experience perspective, I'd encourage you guys to look at the actual use cases. How are you going to deliver that? You know, what type of devices are you going to need to connect, you know, to the future network? And I think what all the panelists here talked about is the good thing is you have a number of options, right, that could provide a 5G-ish type of experience, and just really figure out what the actual use case, what the endpoints will be, and really align that, and that probably will be your strategy, right? And, you know, I think many of it will be heterogeneous. So thanks.
Great. John?
My message is it's very important early in the development cycle of a new build or a major refresh to look at both the wireless and the physical infrastructure as an asset. That's what I mentioned earlier. Further, how today's buildings are at the physical layer wired, there's great opportunity for building owners to reduce significant costs by not running 20 independent cables all over the place. And it starts there. And finally, know that companies like Corning and others, and many on this call, are spending a lot of R&D dollars developing technologies in the wireless and Wi-Fi space to make and help all of you make these buildings achieve what we all want, really good tenant experiences. That's what this is really all about, in improving productivity and improving life in the home, work, and play environment. So that's my two cents.
Great. And then just quickly from Carl, Luke, and John.
Yeah, so the way I see it is, what problem are you trying to solve today? What problem are you trying to solve in the future? And then how much money do you have to solve that problem, right? And depending on those two things will determine what the right solution is for you today and in the future.
Great. Luke?
Thank you. You know, we see it as a solution to a problem. So connectivity obviously equals productivity and is an allowance for public safety today. So look at your 4G on your real estate today. How is it? If it's not perfected, work on perfecting it, create a strategic master wireless plan, engage trusted experienced partners, make sure that all the carriers are included, and we at T-Mobile don't discount Wi-Fi. We've never met a spectrum we don't like. This is a collaboration of technologies all coming together under a multitude of layers, even though we're using mid-band spectrum for in-building, our 600 band for outdoor, and our millimeter wave for specific assignments. At the end of the day, it's all about the customer experience. It's the same component that the real estate developers and property operators should be looking at as well. How do you effectively solve that for a solution? So thank you.
Great. And then John.
So I think there are a lot of opportunities. I think most everybody on this call has covered a lot of the topics I would cover. But I think there's a lot of opportunity to get this right by looking at the different technologies and the use cases that people are needing to deploy and making sure they assess that prior to making decisions about that. So with that, I'll leave it to you, Nick and Sarah.
Great. If I can, first of all, Sarah, thank you and the team at RealCom for putting this together. I realize that I need everyone on this panel and then some in order to continue to figure this out, but it is certainly an interesting and fun ride as we move forward. So I just want to thank you, the panelists, and all the attendees that joined. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Nick, and I can just echo your thanks here to all the panelists and attendees, and of course to you for moderating the panel. I thought it was a very interesting perspective and brought some really good insights. So I just want to invite you to join us for our next webinar, which will be on digital twins, and then briefly mention that our conference is coming up in June, where we will actually have a 5G pavilion on the show floor, and we will be covering in-building communication sessions throughout the program. And then with that, I'll wish you all a wonderful rest of your day. And thanks again for joining.